Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello again from the Cannes Film Festival. It's Michael Leader here, broadcasting from the Little White Lies flat in the Old Town, right next to the Church of Cannes. So if you do hear any bongs in the next 10 minutes or so, do not worry. It's just the Hunchback of Cannes.
Notre Cannes.
Hunchback of Notre Cannes. You've heard a voice here on the second microphone. It's Hannah Woodhead joining me.
Hi.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
This is your first Cannes?
Yes, it is, yeah.
How is it going?
Good. It's very strange. I feel like I've been here about 200 years now, and it's really been, what, a week?
Mm-hmm,
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's kind of, in comparison to other festivals I've done, it's a lot more manic, a lot more queuing involved, a lot more old men who really want to tell me about, like, well, I've been coming 20 years. No. But it's great. Everything has been going a lot more smoothly than I thought. I've not got shut out of anything yet.
Oh, perfect.
Which is a rarity, it seems, among people I've been talking to. There's a lot of shut outs been happening.
Yeah.
The queue for the lighthouse last night was 2.5 hours long. And
yeah.
So I've done okay so far.
That's perfect.
I think I'm on film 20 now. So
20?
Yeah.
I think I'm into the teens. Deep into the teens now. I think the last time we did a dispatch last week with Charles Brumesco, we'd only seen maybe 3 or 4 films. So
that's how it happens.
It's definitely gathered pace over the last few days. What sorts of things have you been seeing?
Oh, gosh. What day are we on? We are on Monday morning.
It's Monday morning.
See, this is the problem with Cannes. Like, I lose all sense of any film festival. You just lose all sense of time because all you're doing is thinking about everything in terms of movies you've seen. And I've had to make a list on my iPhone because most of the stuff you see at any film festival is not great. So,
yeah.
But things I really liked Jessica Hauser's new film, Little Joe. I really liked the new Nicholas Winding Refn TV show, which screened episodes 4 and 5 here, which was vaguely confusing, but I'm keen to see more of that when it comes out. And then yesterday, I think, was the best day so far at the festival because we had Robert Eggers' new film, The Lighthouse, in the morning, Terrence Malick's new film, A Hidden Life, at lunch, and then Celine Sciamma's new film, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, in the evening.
Yeah.
So it really was like a solid 3, like, top tier film day.
It felt like it finally gathered momentum yesterday with those 3 big films. So
yeah,
we got up very early to be at the front of the queue for The Lighthouse.
Yeah, we were sort of the second group of people in the line. I didn't enjoy that, waking up at 6:30 and being in the queue for 7, but I am told that as part of the Cannes experience.
It totally
is. I'm fully ordained now. And judging by the kind of the wait people had in the evening, and there were problems with projections with the screening in the evening, I think we definitely made the right call and kind of waking up and marching like zombies down to the Croisette, which is a good sort of 15-minute walk.
With pastries and double espressos on hand.
Yeah,
so
we're fully prepared. We prepared, yeah. But it was worth it, 100% worth it. I think watching that film at 8:45 in the morning on this really sort of dreary day was the reason you come to Cannes, to watch this kind of film that is utterly insane and watch it with, you know, your kind of loads of your friends and all come out and be like, we have just seen something that is amazing.
Well, we knew very little going into this. There was just one production still with Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe with a pipe.
Both looking quite like ornery and old.
Is there a one-line description we can make of this film now?
Well, I think Peter Bradshaw kind of said it best when he compared it to Steptoe and Son. It is, I don't know if I can do a one-line description, but it is just two men go to a lighthouse for a month and things happen.
Yeah.
It's very, you can compare it to so many things. You know, there were direct allusions made to The Ancient Mariner. There are literal references to Herman Melville and Moby Dick. Mm-hmm. There are references to Prometheus and Greek mythology. There's so much kind of there, but it's not even subtext or like, oh, what does it all mean? I think it's a very open film and it's very like, everything is right there, which is kind of why I loved it. I think we're so used to films being these kind of tricky beasts that we have to like sit down and be like, yes, but what is the deeper meaning of this? Whereas Robert Eggers is just straight up like, yeah, here's just a weird film I made, which is quite unlike anything I've seen in a long time.
It's not really a horror film in the way that The Witch was a folk horror film.
Yeah, this is just like a tragedy, I guess. It's the only thing I can kind of compare it to is like the old epic poems that you would get, you know, or Edgar Allan Poe's kind of short stories. That's the vibes I was getting from it.
But it's just two guys in extreme weather conditions talking and drinking and sharing stories. Reminded me of the scene in Jaws where Quint is talking about his experiences.
A lot of it is the screaming and the hollering.
And it's written in this incredible dialect from the late 19th century, cribbed from texts at the time.
Yeah, I think we saw in The Witch, like Robert Eggers has this amazing gift. He wrote this with his brother as well, and he has this amazing kind of interest in research, and it totally shows through, and everything in the film feels like there's a thought behind it, and nothing is kind of left to chance. And getting to watch Dafoe and Pattinson kind of just go at it for 2 hours is such a treat, because they're both outstanding actors and they have this incredible like manic chemistry together, and there's an amazing scene with a seagull. It's just it's the gift that keeps on giving, that film, because you're like, how much weirder can it possibly get? And then something else will happen, you're like, oh, okay, I see. I did not expect to see that coming. A lot of physical comedy that I wasn't like...
Toilet humour as well, really.
So much toilet humour, which, you know, your mileage may vary on that. But I think everyone that was in that cinema was so kind of pleased that they'd seen the movie. And the Q&A that they did afterwards was really like insightful. And, you know, Q&As can often go either way, especially at film festivals.
Exactly.
But this was like, you know, it was very funny, and it gave us a good insight into kind of how laborious this film was to make. And Willem Dafoe won't stop saying how hard it was to shoot this movie.
Yeah, and he's a guy who's been there.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
He's been around the block.
He's been around the block, and even he was like, yeah, this nearly killed me. But yeah, that, I mean, so starting off right yesterday with that, and then going straight into the 2 hour queue for the Terrence Malick film was...
So I didn't go and see the Terrence Malick. I'm not a huge fan of his, but this is a 3 hour long epic set in the Second World War.
Yeah. So it's about an Austrian farmer who became a conscientious objector and defied the Nazis, who wanted him to enlist. Well, you know, they called him up for service in the dying days of the war. So it would have been, I think it happens in 1943.
Okay.
So yeah, it's his sort of long gestating film. I think people have been saying, yeah, we'll see it at Cannes for like 3 years now. And finally we got there. It's August Diehl and Valerie Packner, who I've not seen in anything before. I don't really know her story. But anyway, they play this couple. He's called Franz and she is called Fanny. And they had this really idyllic life in the Austrian mountains with their three gorgeous little blonde moppets in this village called Ranegund, which was the original title of the film as well. But then everything is upended when he is called away to war and refuses to pledge allegiance to the Nazi party and to Hitler, because there's this whole kind of, I guess, element where it's like, well, you don't have to fight, you could go and, you know, work in a hospital. But he says, no, I would still be betraying my beliefs to support this in any way. I'm not a huge Malick fan, but I think when he's just telling a story straight with no kind of like Tree of Life style, like, weird diatribes. I think, you know, he is a filmmaker with of incredible sort of empathy, and he tells this like sweeping love story over the course of 4 years with just a staggering amount of like heart, and it's a very small story, you know. It's literally one family out of all the families in Europe that were affected by the war, and he manages to sustain this for 3 hours. It never dragged for me. I was totally sort of captivated by what was happening, and he kind of covers not only this romance but the idea of like what makes a good man, you know, religion, and it's just there's so many huge ideas and grand speeches in the film, but it still feels like very intimate and very beautiful and poignant without kind of falling away into sort of sentimentality and portraying this story as like as heartbreaking as it was. It's full of a lot. I think Adam mentioned this in his review for Little White Lies, that it's so full of light and colour, and even these kind of settings like the detention camp and the prison that Franz is sent to are kind of bathed in light and green, and it's really interesting to kind of see what is, I guess, on a, in loose terms, a war film, kind of so keen to highlight the good times as well as the bad. So yeah, for me it was, everyone's saying, oh, Malick's back, this is a return to form, but you know, it's kind of, did he ever go away, you know?
But it certainly sounds like if you weren't a fan of his more recent Song to Song, etc. films.
I hated To the Wonder, and I think this is, if you like the old school Malick, then it's definitely more of that ilk. You
that
know, he's just
good.
Telling this really quite incredible story in the sort of beautiful way that he does tell stories. He's, you know,
fantastic.
So that was film number two of what was turning out to be a great day.
A great day. And while you were seeing the Malick, I was seeing the new Celine Sciamma film in competition, which is Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yeah.
She is, of course, one of the great filmmakers working today. I don't think she's made a bad film to date, with Tomboy and Girlhood and
such a diverse filmmaker as well.
Water Lilies, you know. As well. Well, it's interesting. She said when Girlhood came out, she'd made so three coming of age films in a row. She said her next film would not be like this, and it's nothing like
it
that.
It isn't, but it also kind of is. Mm-hmm. Like, there is that element of these two young women kind of finding themselves, but it isn't a coming of age story.
And it's in the 18th century.
And it is, yeah.
And it's quite formally buttoned down and emotionally so. For some time, it's about these two women and one woman who is contracted as an artist to paint a portrait of a young woman who's about to be married off into society.
Yeah.
And they form a relationship.
Yeah, they have this very sort of, at first, a kind of strange dynamic where the mother of this sort of noble woman has told the young painter to paint her in secret. So Heloise, the lady who is to be painted, does not want to get married to this Milanese nobleman, so she's making it very difficult for them to paint her portrait. And I guess that's the first sort of half hour is just kind of them sort of staring each other down a little bit and kind of trying to suss each other out. But then it expands into this really, like, God, I want to use the word beguiling, but I feel like I've called several films at this festival beguiling. But it's a really beautiful and awe-inspiring love story, and it reminds me of so many other films, but yeah, it has this very sort of distinct visuality to it. There's so many kind of amazing scenes in it, which in sort of lesser hands I think could come across as quite like overwrought, but in Sciamma's hands they're just, you know, like, for a film about painting, everything in it kind of looks like a still life. If you took any still from this film, you know,
it just looks gorgeous.
I think there's one released at the moment which does look like a, you know, a painting, but it's,
but it just does the work early on dramatically, so that in the second half of the film it can build to such intensity, sensuality, but then also have certain scenes that just incredibly profound about being a woman artist, being a woman subject of an artist, and the dual gaze of being looked at but also looking. And it's, wow, it's incredible. You saw this in the evening at the press screening, and I saw it in the afternoon at the actual Grand Theatre Lumiere premiere.
Oh, that must have been incredible.
It really was. Standing ovation. It really feels, it's part of being wrapped up in part of the Cannes bubble, I guess, but it feels like this is undeniably powerful and must win something by the end of the week.
And it's in competition.
It is in competition.
So, you know, I think this is the first thing that I've seen that is a real contender. Mm-hmm. Pain and Glory was really good as well, which I watched just before I came here. But this to me is such a kind of formally, like, incredibly accomplished piece of work. But there are moments in it that just take your breath away. You know, I think the ending is one of the kind of most stunning endings to a film I've seen in a very long time. There's a scene kind of midway through the film which feels like a bit of a bolt from the blue, but in a really kind of good way, where there's this choral chant which has been written for the film, which is just kind of hypnotic. And the use of Sciamma's kind of, I don't know who the cinematographer was on this, but my god, some work has been done. You know, you get to see the origins of the title of this movie in a kind of really incredible scene. And I just, it's nice to find a film that even when you have watched 17 films in the 3 days previous, still takes your breath away and feels like something that was kind of made just for you. Even when you're sat in a room full of other people, it feels so intimate, like someone is literally just sort of holding your hand and telling you this story. So yeah, I mean, I was absolutely floored by that. I really hope that is one that does run and run and doesn't just become another Cannes bubble subject.
Well, I know that's already has been bought for release in the UK. Curzon Artificial Eye are going to release that, so at least that will get a release.
And, at least people will definitely get to see that. Listening to this podcast, I imagine last year as well, it must be frustrating to think, like, some of these movies, unfortunately, just don't get out, but that one at least.
Exactly. It's nice to be reminded as we go into the second week that we're not just jaded cynics.
Cinema
can still delight us, right?
And, you know, I think yesterday definitely proved that cinema is, it's alive and well. You know, there are these incredible filmmakers telling these incredible stories, and you can't really say enough what a kind of privilege it is to get to come to Cannes and highlight these stories to people and kind of champion them early on in their life.
And hopefully that momentum can keep going. So today the competition films are Le Jeune Ahmed, which is the new Dardenne brothers film.
Yes.
They're the Cannes regulars, or the new film from them is always a highlight. But then also Frankie, the new film from Ira Sachs, the New York-based filmmaker.
Yeah, Isabelle Huppert.
Brendan Gleeson.
Great casting. Who would ever put those two together? I mean,
exactly. But it feels like Tuesday is the day.
Tuesday is the big day. That's Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then Bong Joon-ho's Parasite in the evening. So for me, that's like, that's a top tier day. It's strange to be talking about these films now after kind of being here a week and still having so many films to go, and thinking like, God, it's like, I've still probably got another 10 or so that I've got to, that I'm going to go and see.
Yeah.
If the caliber continues to be as high as it has so far, I'm really excited. I always feel like there's a constant discourse around, like, every year at Cannes, there'll be people like, oh, well, this year just wasn't a good year. But, like, how can you be so cynical? I think it's, you know, and the themes we're seeing emerging as well are really kind of interesting. There's been so much decapitation in this year's films. A lot of kind of, like, very strong anti-capitalist messages, and a lot of really good queer cinema as well. I'm happy to report that I think progress is so slow when it comes to changing the film world, but this does feel like more the caliber between the good things you're seeing and the bad things you're seeing. There's quite a wide gulf, but like the good things are truly like amazing, as we've seen recently.
What a positive point. We have had questions after the last two episodes where we had Adam talking about pizza, Charles Bromesco talking about he's not eating pizza this festival, he's eating pasta instead. What are you eating this can, Hannah?
I'm eating a lot of gelato. I love a good gelato, and Cannes has some primo gelato spots. You, in fact, took me to my favourite one.
It's
so
called
far.
Neva. Yeah.
Neva is great, run by lovely staff, and they kind of, the way they scoop it is like kind of like don't know. They're not just like scooping it and like, here you go, here's your ice cream. They're putting love and care into it.
Do you have a
that.
Flavour of choice?
I had a very nice salted caramel, which I like. I've got my own a tiramisu. I think I'm going to head back, you know, today. Get the other thing, which of course the listeners won't get from listening to us talk, is that the weather here has been very changeable this week.
Yeah, worse than the UK has in the last few days.
Yeah, and the past few days have just been kind of like drizzle, and it's good movie watching weather, I have to say. You know, you wouldn't want to be outside. But not great for gelato eating.
But it looks like the sun is out now. Yeah. So maybe on the way to Jeune Ahmed, we can try out some gelato. Maybe you can have that tiramisu.
I hope so. I really do. We had great movies yesterday, great ice cream today. That's all I want, really.
That's all you want from life. Hannah, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm sure we'll chat again before the end of the festival. I'm Michael Eder, talking here from Little White Lies, flat in Cannes, for Truth and Movies, produced by 7Digital.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.